All right, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We only have one case on our 10:30 docket. Before starting, I'd like to introduce Justice Leanne Dofano to my right, and then to my left is Justice Bonnie Sutterith. I'm Chief Justice Terry Livingston, and we're happy to have you here with us today. We have read all your briefing. I do want to just confirm, it looks like the photos that have been provided to the bench, they were part of the record as I understand it. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your
Honor. All right, and opposing counsel has said as well. All right. All right, well, we will call then Tarrant Regional Water District versus Johnson, cause number 2-16-43-CV. And if the appellant is ready to start, we will begin.
May it please the court, Joel Gary for the appellant, Tarrant Regional Water District. In this case, Brandy Johnson, an adult, allegedly drowned when she walked fully clothed in the middle of winter through a 10-foot-wide swath of swiftly moving river water over a smooth kayak chute with a 150-foot river flowing on either side of her, and with warning signs indicating she shouldn't walk through the chute. The Johnsons, her parents, argued that that's the district's fault. They point to several conditions of the dam to contend that those conditions are premises conditions for which the district is liable under the Tort Claims Act.
Remind me what warning signs were present saying that she shouldn't walk across the chute.
There's a no pedestrian sign, the typical sign you see on a street corner at a crosswalk. It's indicated to you you're not supposed to walk across the street, a circular sign with a pedestrian and a strike through.
And that was located where?
Within 20 feet of each side of the chute. If you look at the police report of the investigating officers, they identified the sign as 19 feet, 6 inches from the chute.
Thank you.
There was also a sign at the top of the levee indicating that if you're going to go down there, you should use caution. It was designed more towards children. It said, caution, safety, please watch your children, because there had been incidents at these dams involving children, apparently with under supervision.
And they were taking the position that there should be no pedestrians, but if there are pedestrians, be careful.
There should be no pedestrians walking through the chute.
Did the sign say that or just say no pedestrians?
The sign just says no pedestrians. Okay, but it's it.
And then there's another sign down there saying take care if you're down here.
Yes. Yeah. I'll also point out that another indicator that you shouldn't walk through the chute, I don't know if you've been in this location. I know we're not going to go outside the record, but I've been there several times myself. This is a 10-foot-wide swath of swiftly moving water. It is, you can hear it moving from the top of the levee. That's a tremendous indicator to anybody with all due respect, some common sense, that you should not try to walk through it. If you do, you might slip, you might fall into the river, and what might happen, especially if you can't swim, you might drown. Okay. So the Johnsons point to several conditions of the dam that they contend create premises liability for the district, but each of the aspects that they challenge are all barred by the discretionary function exception. The discretionary function exception, 101.056 of the Tort Claims Act, indicates that the government, when it's exercising its policy discretion, simply cannot be held liable in tort for the result of those decisions.
But so can't they be held liable for a premises liability cause of action when there's a fact in question as to whether or not they adequately warned?
No. No.
The discretionary function, that State versus Payne and all the line of cases that talk about the state being responsible for certain conditions, if they don't either make it safe or adequately warn, just that body of law doesn't exist any longer.
Well, the body
state is immune from such lawsuits.
The body of law exists. What the discretionary function exception says is that even if they establish that you have met, the plaintiff has established, it's met factually all the elements of a premises claim, if the condition being challenged is something that results from the government's discretionary policy implementation, then the government can't be held liable for it. In other words, you can establish the elements of your claim, but if what you're challenging...
So if the government creates a hazard and fails to either make it safe or adequately warn, there's no remedy because the torts claim law bars that. That's your position?
No, my position is that if the government, if you're talking about a true defect, and I pointed to the recent Texas Supreme Court opinion where they talk about defect, and they talk about what that really means. A defect is something missing, something that should be there but is not, something that's broken. If you're talking about a true defect, I think the government has a duty to warn about that. But a true defect is not a policy decision. That's a decision made by somebody at the lower level who failed to repair it, failed to maintain it. A true defect, the government has a responsibility, I think, to repair. If they know about it, they have to have actual knowledge. But if they know about it, they have some responsibility to do something about it. When you're talking about a true policy decision of how do we build something, how do we decide how to tell the public about this, when you're talking about those type of policy decisions, those are outside the purview of the tort system. Does that answer your question?
Not sure, but I'll
okay,
let you go on.
I tried. So let me go back to looking at the conditions. I think you understand what the conditions are that they've challenged, which are the chute and the fact that the water moves quickly through the chute. Well, obviously, that's how the dam was designed. It won't work otherwise without that. You got to have the chute. You got to have the water moving quickly through the chute. So that clearly is something that is barred by the discretionary function exception. The depth of the water downstream, there's a lot of complaint about this, that there was a scoured area. And there's a lot of factual information surrounding this in the briefing. I don't want to go through all that for you. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, the dam was designed to have at least 8 feet of water below the kayak chute in 2003. The evidence is undisputed on that. The engineer indicated it can be no shallower than 8 feet. Okay? Now, they're conditioned it should be 3.5 feet, and there's a lot of factual discussion about why that is or why that isn't. But the reality is, it's undisputed that at the conclusion of the construction, the channel was 8 feet deep, and that was at the direction of the engineer who designed the dam. Why? Because there was concern that people going through the dam using kayaks, if it was much shallower, might impact the bottom of the river channel. So that decision was a design decision. They also talk about an alleged hydraulic boil or undertow. This one mystifies me from a factual standpoint because I don't think the record could be any clearer. There is no hydraulic boil. There is no undertow at this location. The Water District's engineer repeatedly testified to that, but plaintiffs continue to argue that there is such a thing. There's not. Because there isn't, it doesn't support their claim.
What, wasn't there testimony by some other witness that there was this hydraulic boil on the other side of the dam?
No, there was a newspaper article submitted by Mr. Zeta in the trial court where a person who jumped into the water was interviewed by a reporter, and she told the reporter something along the lines of, I felt like I couldn't swim. I felt like I was getting pulled down. That's not evidence of an hydraulic boil. Could be evidence of her wearing clothes. Could be evidence of the water being cold. Could be evidence of 15 things, but it's not evidence of a hydraulic boil. There is no competent evidence there's a hydraulic boil here. So let me turn to the signs. The Johnson's complaints about the warning signs are that they weren't big enough, they didn't say the right thing, they didn't provide a sufficient warning. Well, as I back up, let me mention something I talked about earlier. When this dam was originally built, I don't believe it was contemplated that somebody would try to walk through this. It's simply when you look at it, it strikes you as, I'm not going near it. Okay, and that's why the prior incidents they've had have involved children who weren't being supervised, who went out there, got close to the water, got washed in. Parents went in after them. Sometimes parents drowned.
Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
Are those steps leading down to the dam where you would cross?
I'm not sure exactly what you're pointing at.
I'm pointing at the steps
okay.
Right here.
Let me look at it with you.
Well, actually, there's even a wheelchair ramp, isn't there?
There is. Let me explain.
Well, then why would you not expect people to be walking on it if you provide them with steps and a wheelchair ramp to get to it?
The steps? And this is, okay. Let me take you back through the history of this dam. The original dam was built in the late 60s. Okay. Shortly after that, sometime in the 70s, these steps were built down because the dam did go all the way across. The old dam did. These steps were built down. You could go out, you could fish on it, you could walk across it. There's a fishing pier. If you look at your picture, it's to the left. That fishing pier is there, okay? When this dam was built, those were not removed because they were still available for people to go down and fish or if they wanted to go down and access the dam and put their kayak in, put their inner tube in, or just sit beside the dam, or just sit there and watch the water. You know, part of the balance that the government has to do is, part of our mission is we provide recreation to the public. You know, we provide beautiful things to the public. We want them to access the river. We want them to have that ability to take their kids down there and sit and watch the water. Or we want them, if they're sports people, to be able to use kayaks. We want people in wheelchairs. If they want to go down and sit and watch the water, they can do that. If they want to fish on a pier, they can do that. The government has to think about those things and then also balance it with, okay, now we have seen a couple of indications where children have gone in the water. What do we do about that? Do we completely blow up the dam? Do we close off the chute? Do we pave over the chute? Do we fence off the dam so nobody can get to it? Do we put signage up? If we put signage up, what kind of signage do we put up? My point is, those are the policy decisions that the government has to make. That's why the government is given that power by the people. We have to balance those things. What are we going to do? They made a decision to put the signs up that they put up. That's their discretion. It's not for me or for a court or for a jury to go back in and say, you should have done something else. You should have done something else. There are multiple cases on that point. I think the best one is Guadalupe River Blanco Authority versus Petoniac, the Court of Appeals in Corpus Christi about 10 years ago. Very similar case, drowning. The water district had signs up. The plaintiffs complained the signs weren't sufficient.
Let me ask you this before you get into that. I'm familiar with that case, but the sign that said no pedestrians, I want to make sure that I understand the facts. The sign that says no pedestrian actually is in front of the pedestrian walkway and the ramp, not after you get down to the bottom of it, right?
No, if you look at one of the pictures Mr. Zeta gave you, 731, do you see that one? Do you see the no pedestrian sign right there in the center? Before you get to the chute,
down
attached to the dam.
There's a little bitty one down here in the rock.
And that's the one on this side. There's a similar one on the other side.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay, so if you're walking
it's
up on the chute.
The sign that you talked about that's actually on the
On the dam.
Ground.
Right. So if you're walking
it's not a
the
sign
chute,
upright. It's a sign on the ground.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I got
if you're
it.
Walking towards a chute, and I've done this myself, you're walking towards it. It's directly in line, and it's about 12 by 12.
Okay.
And it jumps out at you. So as I was talking about in relation to the type of signage used, what type of safety measure to implement, those are all decisions that the Tort Claims Act and the courts in interpreting Tort Claims Act have relegated to the government. Because they've challenged the signs and the signs, that challenge is barred by the discretionary function exception. So it's the district's position, as you know, the discretionary function exception bars all of the claims asserted by the Johnsons. But even if it didn't, the district owes no legal duty to warn or protect an adult from what is an unequivocally open and obvious risk. If you attempt to walk through this water, shooting through the chute, you might fall. You might go into the river, regardless of whether you how deep it is, whether you know the underwater characteristics of the river, whether it's shallow, whether it's got an undertow. If you go through this, you might slip, and you might fall, and you might end up in the water, and you might drown, especially if it's 32 degrees in the middle of winter and you're fully clothed. So there's a common sense element to this, I think, that makes this risk open and obvious. And courts around the country have looked at this from the standpoint of when you're interacting with a natural body of water, and I gave you several cases very factually similar to this, you're interacting with a natural body of water. You assume the risk that that interaction could result in injury to you. Regardless of whether you know if the water is moving fast, whether it's deep, whether it's got an undertow, you make that decision as a human being. I know there's water. All human beings know water is dangerous. Even young children know it. I've got two boys, they're knuckleheads, but even they know that water is dangerous. When you make that decision to interact with it and something bad happens, you've just confronted an open and obvious danger. And under premises liability law, even if the discretionary function exception did not apply, under premises liability law in the Texas Supreme Court recent case in Austin versus Kroger, open and obvious bars the claim. I'm just about out of time, so I'll be happy to answer any additional questions you might have. And obviously, we ask that the court reverse the trial court's denial of plea to jurisdiction.
Let me just clarify then, for all the claims asserted by the appellee, the district's position is that the discretionary function aspect or exception under the Tort Claims Act applies to each and every one, correct?
Yes, everything. We didn't talk about because there are some minor issues. They pled a tangible personal property claim. They pled a special defect claim. Those really didn't merit significant argument. I think you understand that as a matter of law, those can't stand. But yes, the pure premises liability claim based on licensee liability, the district's position is the discretionary function exception bars those as a matter of law.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Zeta.
May I please the court? This case was in front of Judge Evans. He denied the plea to jurisdiction. This case has a jurisdictional limit of $100,000, and it is governed by, in essence, the summary judgment standard on the facts. There is an extensive factual summary in the brief. I would rather do it by pictures, which is why I gave you all the pictures to look at. And the first picture I gave you, it's 691 in the record. And if you look at that picture was taken by a police helicopter 2 hours after Brandi Johnson died. She died at 1 p.m. on January 16, 2013. If you look at picture 691, in the upper left-hand corner, you see I-30. And going horizontally across the top of the picture, you see University Drive. What happened on January 16th was Brandi Johnson had an interview at Park Plaza Building. And if you look at the very lower part of the picture, you can see the end of the word plaza, where the Park Plaza Building is. She was dropped off by a T-bus on University Drive on the other side of the river from the Park Plaza Building. She walked along the Trinity Trail, came to the area where there are steps, where there is a handicapped accessible entrance, to walk across to get to the Park Plaza Building. As she was walking across, she came up to the kayak chute. She had UGG boots on. She had heavy coat on. The water was 37 degrees, and she fell. Two witnesses from the Park Plaza Building heard her screaming at 12:59.
Now, we're not really sure she was actually in the chute, are we?
Correct, Your Honor. The circumstantial evidence shows that she was, based on all the evidence that we have.
Right. And from this photograph, it sure looks like the water was running through the chute.
Correct, Your Honor, it was.
So why wasn't this open and obvious to her?
Because, Your Honor, when you're a 19-year-old girl coming to a interview and you're walking across what appears to be a walkway and the water is smooth-looking, and if you look at the second picture, which is picture 731, that water appears to be smooth.
Is that a photo that was taken on the same day as
that
well?
That was taken on the same day by the police at the scene. That was taken at approximately 2 o'clock, about an hour after the scene. So someone walking across there who sees the building where they're supposed to have their interview, who's 19 years old, she goes across to see that, and it's deceptively smooth-looking. Now, their safety engineer has testified that the water that was going through here was going at a power velocity. That was his word, power velocity. The current was deceptively strong. There was no way that she would have known how strong that current was. What was not visible is at the base of the dam, going all the way across the dam and 200 feet downstream, is a scour hole. That scour hole is not part of any design. They knew, Tarrant Regional Water District knew about it, and that scour hole went down to 12 feet deep. Now, as much as they want to escape their safety engineer's testimony that she should have been able to stand up in 4 feet, they can't. What should have happened was this should have been 4 feet and she should have been able to stand up in that spot. But she wasn't able to because it was 12 feet deep. In addition, because of the scour hole, there was an increased boil effect. And that boil effect decreases buoyancy and makes it difficult to swim. He testified page 333 of the record, their safety engineer, and it's dam safety engineer, but I don't want it to appear like I'm swearing at the court, so it's a safety engineer regarding dams. He testified at 333 of the record, in my opinion, the scour hole was creating more of a boil effect. In my opinion, the scour hole was creating more of a boil effect. He testified that what was happening here was there was more of a boil effect. There is no way that Brandi Johnson could have known any of that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Is open and obvious a factual question or a question of law?
It's a fact question, and in the cases that they cited, it was a fact question as well. The court said that. But, yes, Your Honor, it's a fact question. It's something for the jury. And if you take the summary judgment standard and assume all facts in our favor, I think we prevail on that issue.
So do we have summary judgment evidence indicating what the depth of the river was at the dam and at the bottom of the chute?
Yes, Your
as
Honor.
Well as the depth wherever this scour hole is?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. At the base of that dam that you're looking at in picture 691, at the base of that dam, it was 11 to 12 feet deep on the day of the drowning. What it should have been is 4 feet deep. She was found in 13 feet deep of water.
Okay, so it should have been at 4 feet. Yes. Based on what?
Testimony of their safety engineer. I asked several times in his deposition, should she have been able to stand up on that day had the scour hole not been there? And he said yes.
But the scour hole isn't at the base of the dam, is it?
It is.
I thought you just said it was 200 yards downriver.
It goes from the dam all the way across the dam, begins at the base, and goes 200 feet downstream.
Okay.
It's 200 feet by 100 feet.
Thank you.
It's okay. Very large. And it's so large that they had tried to repair it, and that's their word, repair, back in 2002. They put construction materials in there. The construction materials were pulled out in 2007, and there's a little artificial island about a quarter of a mile downstream where all the repair materials were pulled out and made a little island there. So there's no way that Brandi Johnson could have known that. There were 6 prior drownings at or near this location. 2007, 2005, 2007, 2009, twice in 2010, and again in 2011. Tarrant Regional Water District, through the media, said, we're going to address this problem. And they didn't. They didn't address this problem.
Was the scour hole part of the design in the revisions that were made, in 1980? Is that when the revisions were?
No, Your Honor. In fact, on page 340, of the record, and in the brief on page 8 of my brief, I quote their safety engineer saying that the scour hole was not part of any design. So,
all right, to unconfuse me.
Yes, Your Honor.
Picture 783 shows.
That's the last one I was going to get to.
Tall signs, a big yellow and white sign, and then a little red and white sign. But that's not where she crossed, is that correct?
Your Honor, in fact, that is where she crossed, but what the purpose of this picture is to show the court what they did after.
Okay.
All right, this is what it should have looked like. 783 is what they should have had there, and I will tell the court, and it's in the record, that since they put these signs up, that a young man, an 11-year-old and his father, came there 2 weeks after Brandi Johnson drowned. Same spot, and nearly drowned. Brandi Johnson went with one of the witnesses in front of TRWD and said, fix the problem. And they've been told to fix the problem for years, and they told media they were going to fix the problem. It wasn't until after all of that, 6 deaths, all of this, that they put these signs up. These signs would have made it open and obvious. These signs would have made it so that Brandi Johnson could have made a choice as to whether or not to cross that day. Since 2012, no one has drowned or nearly drowned at this site. They should have fixed the problem, and they didn't. They have testified it relies on a design decision, and therefore it's outside of the discretionary function. The Bonin case says that if you have a defective condition that you knew about, that they knew about, but they didn't fix, that's not a design decision, and that's what the Bonin case says. And on third, they didn't maintain it right. And so since they didn't maintain it and didn't repair it properly, that takes it outside of discretionary function. Those are the 3 primary arguments. They also designed the sign that we were talking about, that little bitty sign where they say, counsel said it said caution. It didn't say caution. In fact, there's evidence in front of the court that they expressly took the word caution out of the sign. And it's a very tiny sign that you can't even see in the picture on 691. In 731. There's some people standing up at the bank. There's a big sign there that says no fishing, or something about fishing. I can't remember what it says. But next to it, and very small, was the safety first, watch your children, with a confusing graph. And it was no bigger than a dinner plate. That's not enough. And they had said, let's put signs on similar to what are 783. To what Water District said, let's put signs up that are similar to that, and they chose not to. I would argue that's a policy decision, and they chose not to follow their policy. With respect to the open and obvious, you know, if it was so open and obvious, why did six people drown there in the 6 years before? There's testimony from a lady who went to save one of those people, that when she went in and tried to save someone, she was really caught by that boil effect. She said how hard it was for her to stay afloat when she saved those people. There is so much testimony. In order to establish that it falls under the Tort Claims Act, you have to establish gross negligence, or you have to establish that, I'm looking for my, or that they had actual knowledge of the dangerous condition. There's so much evidence of gross negligence or actual knowledge of the dangerous condition that they didn't even argue it to you. They argued it down at the lower court, but they didn't bring that up here. They knew about it. They knew what was going on. They chose not to fix it. This young lady was going to a job interview, 5 months pregnant, trying to do the right thing, walks across, and drowns. They could have fixed it. They didn't. It wasn't a discretionary function. It wasn't a design decision. They knew about it. The testimony that there was evidence there that wasn't an open obvious and people drowned. Based on that, unless there's any other questions, I would ask the court affirm Judge Evans' decision.
Thank you, Mr. Zeta. All right, Mr. Geary.
There were a number of factual and legal misrepresentations in that presentation. I'm not going to try to parse through them for you one by one. I'll leave it to your good grace to look at the briefing and look at the record. And
no, why don't you tell us what the misrepresentations?
Sure. Let me start with the first one, that there was a hydraulic bolt at the dam that this woman reportedly fell into. He read you part of the testimony. He didn't read you the rest. The question was in the deposition, and a scour hole can create more of a bowl effect. Is that correct? Answer. Depending on the water, how the water comes off the structure upstream of the scour hole. And then after that was discussion about the fact that the old dam, which was a vertical face dam, created a hydraulic bowl. The engineer was very specific in his deposition, in his declaration, there was no hydraulic bowl at this dam. I'm mystified as to why that assertion keeps getting put forward, but it's erroneous.
Did he assert it, or did he just by omission?
No, he asserted it.
Said with the old structure it did. Did he affirmatively say with the new structure it didn't?
Yes, he did. Okay. And I don't have the deposition testimony in front of me, but he was specifically asked. I think it was a leading question by Mr. Zeta. So it's your testimony there's no hydraulic bowl at this dam. Yes, there's not. There's no hydraulic bowl at this dam. He specifically went into it in his declaration as well. He pointed out that in the petition they had alleged there's a hydraulic bowl in an undertow. His response in the declaration, this is incorrect. There's not. Okay? I don't have to be any clearer. There's no controverting engineering testimony to controvert that. So I think the evidence is pretty clear on that point. And again, once you decide you're going to walk across this and you're going to interact with this water, regardless of what's underneath, you're taking the risk you might fall in and drown if there's 5 foot of water, 10 foot of water, 15 foot of water, or hydraulic bowl or no hydraulic bowl. Open and obvious is a legal issue. It's not a factual issue. Texas Supreme Court has made that clear. The argument Mr. Zeta made towards the end regarding this should have been fixed or there should have been a different sign, that really goes to the heart of the discretionary function exception. What do you do with this? I was involved in this process when one of these happened. How do you deal with this? You have to weigh the desire to keep the area open for the public. The public pays for this. They pay for the ability to fish. They pay for the ability to sit and watch the water. They pay for the ability to kayak.
I thought I said no fishing.
I don't know. Mr. Zeta said that. I don't know what he's talking about. I'm not aware of a no fishing sign.
Judge Sutter, I thought, pointed out that the sign up there says no fishing.
I'd have to look at the picture looking at it, because there's a fishing pier right there. People fish off the pier all the time.
When you talk about the fishing pier, you're talking about the area that's at the bottom of the Trinity Park side. It looks like it's at the bottom of the wheelchair ramp. Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Was the scour hole part of the design? Does the evidence indicate that the scour hole was part of the design?
Dams are not designed to create scour holes. They do as a matter of engineering.
Right.
Just as a matter of engineering. So he was asked a question in the deposition, is the scour hole part of the design? Well, no, it's not. The dam was not designed to create a scour hole. The old dam we're talking about in the 1970s, it was a vertical face dam, mm-hmm. meaning water went straight over, pushed the sediment downhill, and creates the scoured area. We're not talking about a hole in the sense you and I would think of a hole. We're talking about a wholesale movement of sediment 150 feet across the river, 200 feet down the river. So it's not part of a dam design in that perspective, but what it is, what it became part of when the dam was redesigned in 2003 and the district did a bathymetric survey and determined how deep the water was, the engineer who designed the 2003 dam said, I want to keep it deeper than its original channel depth. I want to keep it at least 8 feet deep below that, okay? So they kept part of the so-called scour hole to ensure that people using the kayak chute wouldn't get injured going through the chute. It had to be deep enough for people not to get injured. So from that perspective, and there's a ton in the record on this, from that perspective, the decision to keep the depth not at the original 1966 design grade, which is kind of what we're talking about when we're talking about the scour hole, the decision to keep the depth at least 8 feet, that was part of the design.
Okay, so I think what I heard you say was the scour hole's not part of the design, but when you apply, let's say, physics, the laws of physics or the laws of engineering, it's a consequence of creating the dam, not part of the design, but a known consequence.
It was a known consequence of the original dam that was there.
Okay, and I have one other question. The facts that Appley alluded to about the attempts to repair it, is that, do you take issue with that statement of fact? Was there an attempt to repair the scour hole?
There was no attempt to repair it. During the construction of the 2003 dam, there was a lot of rubble. There was a earthen cofferdam that was in the channel there. There was a lot of rubble that was rolled off into that channel. Okay, it created additional elevation to the channel. So it was filled in to some extent. It wasn't completely filled in because the engineer who designed the dam said, I need at least 8 feet of water depth. So it wasn't a repair. That's a word they've used because they weren't trying to fit it under this.
What word does the record use?
What word does the record use? That it was site cleanup.
A site cleanup.
They were taking the rubble, pushing the rubble in, filling in the rubble into the channel as a method of site cleanup, not a repair. Now, since then, there's been some look at this, talking to the engineer who designed that dam in 2003. Since then, there's been some discussion about, can we go back in and raise the level of the channel? And that's something that's being contemplated. It's going to be extremely expensive to do that, but that is something that's being contemplated. But in any event, as part of the dam design in 2003, there's no effort to repair the hole. I have nothing further.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Geary. Mr. Zeta, we appreciate all of your briefing in this matter. As well as all of your research and your oral arguments today. Your case is now submitted, and we will adjourn court.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals of the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned.